You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Gather round, loyal listeners. It's the Brooking Report on Radio 1 91 FM.
It sure is. Good morning to you, Rachel. How are we?
I'm very good, thank you.
I'm very good too.
Excellent.
It's a pretty chill week. Actually, no, it's not. It's a hecker week. Real heckers week. Tent City.
Yeah.
You made it to that, right?
I did. So I've been back and forth between Dunedin and Wellington. There with Tent City, with my sort of parliamentary services hat on, saying hello to new students, and I'm introducing myself as a local MP and pointing out where my office is, just down the road from here. And then back again on Thursday for Clubs Day with the Young Labour, Southern Young Labour crew, and trying to tell people how great Labour is.
Man. What sort of, I've always wondered this, what sort of influence does the youth wing have on the main party?
It depends how organised they are.
Yeah,
the short answer. So in off election years, so those 2 years when we're not in an election year, the party does lots of policy development, and the youth wings, they can put up remits, and they can, so remits being a policy idea. So it might be no student loans, say. That was the policy. That they might put that up, and then they'll try and convince other members of the party that that's a really good policy and that they should endorse it, and then it should move through the process and end up in the manifesto.
Sure. That's cool. How often do students contact you with anything in general?
Yeah, not...
Or political... political, I guess, aspirations or
there's different sorts of contacts I get from students. So I get individual constituent issues from students. So I've had some housing ones, and then they might have some other issues. There might be immigration issues or something like that. But generally, not heaps of those sort of constituent interactions. But then I have different interactions with students where they've got a agenda or something that they're pushing. So people might be worried about, I've had some worried about yellow-eyed penguins, and they've come to talk to me about those issues. So I get, you know, groups of students through that are concerned with particular issues. And then I try and stay in contact with OUSA as well about sort of, you know, bigger political issues and what's going on.
Yeah, it's very, very cool.
Oh, and then, to answer your question, to get me there, then, of course, there are some ambitious young people who want to be politicians at some point. So some of them, sometimes they might be interns with me, or, you know, we go through and have youth MPs, or they're involved in Southern Young Labour, or they're just political beings who want to talk about politics. So I have those chats as well.
Cool. On Instagram, you posted a screenshot of a Zoom meeting that you had with, I think it was Minister for the Environment.
He's the Minister for Resource Management.
For Resource Management, there we
definitely
go.
Definitely not for the environment.
You're on the Environment Select Committee, and you're about to hear on some oral submissions about the Planning and Natural Environment bills. I think you said that the text-based submissions have already been sent through.
That's right.
How was that meeting with the Minister, and what were the core themes of the submissions that you saw?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of big, profound submissions, because the Resource Management Act is a big piece of legislation and deals, and that's what will be repealed in place with these two new bills. And resource management sort of sounds easy, and it gets blamed for a whole lot of things. But when you look at the city and where the roads are and where the trees are and how high the houses are and if they're shading their next-door neighbours, and if you have an industrial activity right next to a house, that often doesn't work very well. So you need some planning. When Labour was in government, we repealed the Resource Management Act and replaced it with two pieces of legislation, a Spatial Planning Act and a Natural and Built Environments Act. What this government is doing, they got rid of what we did, and they're saying, well, we really want people to enjoy their private property rights, so really to be able to do anything that they like on their in an urban environment. And then they've tried to differentiate urban environments from sort of wider environmental issues like water pollution and air pollution. So they're saying, well, that can be in the Natural Environment Act. And then everything to do with cities and planning, that can be in the Planning Act. And we're going to say, if a council puts an environmental control on somebody's individual land, then they have to...
They have to compensate the property owner,
yeah,
which is insane.
So there are lots and lots of submissions that say exactly that point. And then other submitters are really worried about the fact that the environmental bottom lines, the environmental limits, have lots of ways to get around them. So they're not a bottom line. Mm. They're something that you can get around.
Exploitable.
That's right. Yeah. Lots of submissions on that. And then the Māori provisions in it are a step back from the RMA, from the Resource Management Act. Mm. So lots of submissions on that, because Article 2 of the treaty has a lot to do with the natural environment. So in lots of treaty settlements over the years, there's been specific provisions that relate to the Resource Management Act. So that is one of the questions I asked the Minister about. Mm. How can you say that it's an equivalence with these new acts when they are degrading the environment, or they're going to enable more, arguably, degrading of the environment, and the other sort of Māori provisions are not as strong as the RMA? How can you argue that there's an equivalence? And he said, oh, well, we can do that. But the iwi chairs forum, they have actually taken a case making this argument to the High Court. So that's in train at the moment.
Hmm. How long will that take to go through?
I don't know.
Bit of a while. Bit of time.
Normally, so I'm not sure. But certainly this is something that the iwi chairs are aggrieved about.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll see how that goes. I don't know if you've seen in the news, but roads in Auckland have been closed this week. We had a bit of a mini landslide. This is sort of the butt of the weather that's been going and really storming the North Island quite a lot. Do you think this is, climate related?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say slide by slide, but certainly we have had a change in our climate.
It projects a pattern, though. I mean, like, the whole country's getting battered.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that wider pattern, totally, we have lots of evidence to say that we have experienced climate change and we need to do a whole lot about it, which, going back to the discussion about the Planning Act.
You were building a third act about to do climate change adaptation.
Yeah, we were. And but also in those Planning Acts, so there's an issue of where you've got existing houses or other activities in areas that are going to be more at risk from hazards as the hazards get worse. And then you've got an issue with new buildings in hazard areas. So not building new houses in, say, a floodplain. So it's much easier to deal with the not building new houses in a floodplain, because you just say, well, it's not already there. No, you can't do that activity.
Yeah, yeah.
Although this government's going in the opposite direction with their fast track projects. Anyway. So we were going to have another piece of legislation, but to be fair, we didn't introduce it. But it was, the idea was that these existing things that might need to move at some point, you do need agreed, it's got to be bipartisan community agreement, about what the triggers are for when someone might be able to move, what happens before we get to that stage, and then if they do have to move, who pays for that? So, and what are the caps on it? So you might say, well, if someone's got a $10 million house, there's no way that the government can pay $10 million per house, and if, particularly if they built that with some knowledge that they might have to move at some point. However, we've got lots of really clever people in the Environmental Defence Society and other academics who say, well, you can put timeframes on these things, so you can say houses built after X date can get some compensation, but not... or houses built before X date, rather, and you can say, well, we can only compensate up to, say, $1 million or whatever it is. But there has to be some agreement about who does that funding and how much it is. So it might be, well, the private person has to make a contribution. Maybe some local government does, maybe central government as well, but that you have some caps on that and you can do some planning for the future. That's all very difficult to do.
It
could be very expensive. However, the problem that everyone in Parliament agrees with is that if everybody gets paid 100% of market value when an event happens now, there will be no money left at some point. And then that's not fair on the people who might have been living very modestly somewhere for a long time. And it's also false to say, well, government shouldn't pay anything at all, because we know that governments will need to house people.
Yes.
So that's a false narrative. Like, you've got to say, well, how are then government going to fund these people to live somewhere else, and where will that be? But this is all very complicated and difficult.
Yeah. Big problem.
And people have different ideas about it. So, but this government has not shown leadership in that area.
Not engaging with all. The nuance. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's the role of insurance companies there? Because I feel like they're getting quite resistant when it comes to insuring properties that are, you know, maybe a climate hazard.
Well, they'll put up the prices in the first instance. Mm. And the thing with insurance companies are that their contracts are year by year. And there's an interesting relationship with mortgages. So a lot of people, although not all people, a third of houses in New Zealand have no mortgage over them. But many householders have a mortgage. So that is that the bank owns your property to some extent. And that mortgage will say you have to have your property insured.
Mm.
But the mortgage might be for 20 years, whereas the insurance arrangement contract is only for 1 year. So those are two different time frames, and the checking of it is quite difficult. And so insurance companies, they might say in some places, well, we will work with communities to decrease premiums if they do certain things. So in America, where there's lots of hurricanes, insurance companies have said, if you use this particular way of keeping your roof on, then you will get a lower premium. And that's worked really well.
Okay.
You have fewer roofs flying off buildings in a tornado.
And that's good for everyone.
That's right, that's right. So definitely insurance companies are interested in that, but insurance companies aren't the magical answer.
No, they're not, certainly not. I heard from someone who's probably the most informed climate advocate I know that we've exhausted our state of emergencies so far.
Yeah, I've heard people talking about that as well in terms of this year there's been over 25 or some number like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which goes to your earlier point that, you know, climate change is here.
It is here.
And in New Zealand, climate change comes in the form of more storms,
yes,
and that heavier rainfalls, and at the top of the country we'll get more of those tropical storms and cyclones as well. So, whether or not things, I don't quite understand the parlance of we've had our ratio of them, but we can see that we've had more, and we should be doing everything to encourage the international community to reduce emissions is the one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So reduce climate pollution is one thing that we should be doing, and this government has cut almost every single program that was part of reducing climate pollution. And on the other hand, we also need to be talking about these difficult adaptation issues and how we can make sure that communities are safe in both the short term and the long term.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way that this government is adapting to climate change is by rushing through legislation to fast track their own fast track legislation and build a $1 billion natural gas terminal in Taranaki. Chloe Swarbrick was through yesterday and said the venture would most likely cost New Zealanders.
Yeah, that's
would you agree?
Yeah, that's what we're thinking as well.
Mm.
And it seems weird that consumers using electricity are somehow going to have to pay a levy or a tax or whatever you call it, subsidise gas. And this is gas that we're going to lock in by spending so much money on a terminal, lock in the need for this gas when we've got lots of renewable options and we can do things like prioritising where the gas goes at the moment. You know, there are some industries that do rely on gas in a way that households don't need gas, and you could switch out the gas in individual houses for electricity. But those things aren't being thought about. And, of course, this gas is coming from overseas. It's likely to be Australian gas for some time, but we're then relying on those international gas markets, which are totally out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
And those prices can fluctuate a
they
whole
can.
Lot.
I mean, look at what happened after the Ukrainian war.
Yeah, exactly. And so Megan Woods is our energy spokesperson, and she's been prosecuting this in the House and with questions to a range of ministers. And, like, the number of how it's going to save $50, that makes no sense.
Yeah, and Mark Dulder for Newsroom wrote that the energy modelling for improving dry years or reducing peak issues with our energy grid didn't investigate renewable energy very much. It didn't investigate options like freeing up our hydro storage. We are an energy insecure country. We do need more. How do we improve our base of renewables?
Well, one way of doing it is to build them. So this government and the Prime Minister says over and over again, you, Labor Greens, should support the fast track because we're building more renewables under it. And they have consented a couple of renewable projects under it. But the issue is not actually the consenting. There was already a whole heap of renewables. So when I say renewables, I mean wind farms mainly, some solar, perhaps some more smaller hydro as well.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it was consented, and it's not been in the electricity company's interest to build it, or they've not been able to get the funding to build it because of the way that our energy companies work and the different assets that they use, and that they have been asked to always give a profit back to shareholders rather than reinvesting into more electricity generation. So some companies have been building some generation, but others haven't. So there is something in that relationship of those energy companies that's not working to really incentivise a whole lot of building of renewables.
Mm-hmm. More short-termism.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of short-termism, the Moore Point sewage spill in the capital is pumping up millions of litres of sewage into the coast there, putting marine ecosystems under more stress and making beaches unswimmable. It serves as a reminder of how vulnerable, old and underinvested a lot of our critical infrastructure is. Do you think it's also a reminder that central government needs to foot the bill for more local government infrastructure projects so we can, you know, live in a functioning country?
Yeah, so the and deepest sympathies to all the people who live in that area. It's totally gross. And as you say, all the marine life there, there's a marine reserve around that part of the coast as well. So that's a real tragedy. Nanaia Mahuta, I'll take a step back. So I used to be a lawyer working a lot for local governments and could see, and so it was very proximate to councils and could see the problem that councils have had for years and years and years, which is when they say, oh my goodness, these pipes that nobody can see and these pumping stations that nobody can see really need to be upgraded, so we might have to put up the rates. Voters go, no, they're terrible. We don't want the rates to go up. What are these pipes that you're talking about? You know, they're in no way sexy, right?
Yeah.
And so I went to lots of local government infrastructure conferences, you know, this is some time ago now, and people were very aware of this issue and it was talked about. And Nanaia Mahuta became our Minister in Labor of local government, and she saw she really got her teeth into the problem. And the problem is also how councils, so we have 68, 67 territorial authorities. So those are councils with mayors, the way to think about them, around the country. So that means that some of them are very small and some of them are very big. And it's difficult for their balance sheets to be able to invest, to spend a whole lot more on upgrading the infrastructure. So that is why she embarked on that Three Waters program that some people will remember.
Rest in peace.
And the National opposed it and they said, oh, this is taking assets away from local communities and we believe in localism and your terrible Labor government, vote them out. And we were voted out. But what that was doing was trying to combine some of the council's assets into different size but bigger areas.
It was save money in the long term.
That's right.
It was and a huge cost saving measure.
And to be able to get money at a much cheaper price because of those financial arrangements. And that this government has undone all of that. So I'm not saying that the Moa Point situation would have been saved by Three Waters in those timeframes, but this problem is not new. Mm. It has been around for a long time, and these problems will keep happening because this government has gone backwards from where we were.
Is there any particular infrastructure akin to the Moore Point sewage station in Otipoti that you're kind of concerned about in terms of its age, its vulnerability? Anything come to mind?
Well, so not so much in my electorate, but we have those issues in South Dunedin in entirety, in Ingrid Leary's electorate, around also the operation of the Green Island treatment plant. So there are some issues here as well.
Okay, well, those are things we'll keep an eye on. I would ask you about the 2026 election, but I think we're running pretty low on time. There's more stuff to talk about there down the line. Thank you so much for coming on, as always.
But the election date is now set.
That
is the 7th of November, which is the last day of exams here. So really encourage everyone to enrol. They can enrol and at home or in Dunedin, wherever they feel is their home.
For sure, for sure. Thank you again for coming on. Do you have any final words or thoughts to leave our listeners with?
Oh, well, good luck everyone for braving O Week, and despite the weather, perhaps wasn't the best.
Yeah.
And hoping that when classes start back for all those undergrads, that they really, really make the most of them. Go to your lectures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's my top tip.
Take the bull by the horns. Alrighty. Here's Tony.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.